Hare Krishna. Welcome everybody. So I decided to pick a topic that is right at home to all of us. Thank you. And it's a little bit about our false ego. Not a little, it's a big false ego. It's gotten us into a lot of trouble. So anyway, we're going to try to work our way out of it. And so we're taking shelter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. This is a chapter about karma yoga, about how to act in the proper consciousness. And we're going to, this is text 27. Okay, a lot of you know this. So we can all say it together. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Purport. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level may appear to be working on the same platform, but there's a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is a symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is a creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in service of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So we can start by invoking some auspiciousness and praying to the Supreme Lord. So everyone can say, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mahavishnu Bhagavan Krishna Stavikare Shimati Bhakti Vinati Swami Kinnah Namaste Saraswati Devi Norvan Vichara Shri Yusha Shinyamadi Shri Chidya Shatari. So very important verse. And I think just about everybody here and most persons, I think at some time in their life, ask the question who they really are. A little bit interested in self-realization, finding out who is that person that looks through these eyes when they're very young and they see, oh, I was looking at some photos the other day, and it was sweet 16, all dressed up in the prom outfit with the long gloves and the top knot and the beautiful blonde hair and everything, and I was looking, that was me. And I was thinking, that was me. And then now I look in the mirror if I have to. I have a little teeny mirror just to put tilak on. That's all I can get to. But now I look and I see a raisin face. It's been dropped in a bucket of water, and you know how it turns all wrinkly and everything. So now I look like an old raisin that's been in the water for about 3 months. But I'm still the same person. But who is that person inside that is looking out? And it wasn't that teenager, and it's not me now. Who is that person? And so this is the science of self-realization that helps us to go beyond this bodily consciousness, which can be depressing sometimes. And so really, who am I? Well, we say we're not this body, and we can see that it is changing. And to meditate and try to get over that bodily consciousness is difficult work. But even more difficult is that we have a second body, and that's the subtle body. I can't show it to you. No one has ever seen it. It's your intelligence, your mind, and your false ego. I can't put it on display here. A microscope can't find it, but we all have it. It's a very, very powerful body. It's awake when we're sleeping. That's why you dream. It's so powerful. So we have two bodies, two big things to have to deal with it, to find out who that person is that is our real self. And so we can see that we're covered with layers, similar to the universe. It's described that the universe has different layers, the earth and the sky and the water. And every single layer is 10 times thicker. And our soul, our real self, is also covered by these thick layers. Each one 10 times thicker. And the last one, guess what it is? The false ego. So it has an exponent of, I don't know my math that well, but it goes 10 times, 10 times, 10. It's really thick and really crusty. And so this is what we have to deal with. And so this is a lot of work. And if we meditate, we'll find that it's really difficult even just to get off the bodily platform. Has anyone ever had a CT scan? Been in those machine things? One time I had to do it. And so they tell you, okay, now just go in there. You're going to go in a tube, and there's going to be some noise and everything. And in this case, they said, don't swallow. I said, that's a piece of cake. No, I don't have to. I swallow when I eat. You know, no big deal. So I get in that machine, and immediately my mind's saying, I need to swallow. I never think about swallowing. Do you ever think about swallowing? No. But now all of a sudden my mind is thinking, oh my God, I have to swallow. What am I going to do? No, I was total anxiety for those long 2 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever it was. I don't know what it was. But this mind is so intense, so strong, that it can bewilder us. And it does. And it's constantly flowing desires, because we're in contact with so many things. The desires are flowing all the time, and they don't stop. We can try to meditate, but it's very difficult to control. And with these desires, what they do is that they create a name for ourselves. I want to be this, I want to do that, this is me. And we have name tags. The name tag changes, just like, I might have many hats in this lifetime. I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, take off that hat. I'm a student, take off this hat. I'm this or that. And so these name tags, they can get washed out in the washing machine, right? Happens a lot of times. You find out that, oh my God, I left that on, now it's gone. Similarly, in this lifetime and in many lifetimes, we put on different name tags, thinking that I'm this and I'm that according to my body and according to my desires. But we aren't just that name. We're actually the spirit soul. We're much, much, much more. But we have this ego saying that this is me. This body and this mind are myself. This is mine. And so that's proof that this subtle body, this false ego, stays with us. Even when our body goes away, that's so powerful that it stays. The material body, the gross body dissolves. A bunch of chemicals worth probably $40 with inflation these days. But the spirit soul is carrying this subtle body with them as they go from one body to another. And so this is a great concern for us. And the proof is there. Anyone have like a one-year-old, or you've probably had some little kids before, as soon as a little kid can think or relate to anybody, what do? You put something in front of them, they say, it's mine, right? They immediately, it's mine, it's mine, no, it's mine, it's mine. They cry and they get all upset. So that is still there, even when you're teeny tiny whiny. As soon as you can, think, it's there. That's how powerful this false ego is. And it seems like it's kind of embarrassing, because what happens is we grow up and we still think, this house is mine, this car is mine. We still have that childish mentality. We never really mature because that false ego is there, thinking that we're the center of the universe. I'm God's gift to the world. And I'm in control of everything, just like this purport is saying over and over again. But human civilized life is meant to mature us, to understand that I'm much more than that. I'm a spirit soul, and the spirit soul is part of the most splendorous, brilliant, wonderful thing, and that's the Supreme Lord. We have the same qualities. We're minute in quantity, but when we become clear of this false ego, and our real ego will shine, and we'll actually see that we're eternal, and we're full of knowledge, and we're always joyful. And so we can see if we're experiencing that, or if we're not, then we still have those coverings upon us. And to remove those coverings is not the easiest thing. I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember, but there was a documentary. It was called Born to Be Free. Does anyone ever remember that? Yeah, it was a song too. Born to Be Free was about a bunch of ladies that were very concerned about the mammals, especially dolphins, that were out of their natural, they were taken out of their natural habitat and used in businesses to, you know, do like the SeaWorld thing and all that. You know, they were mistreated. They were out. They weren't free. They were put in captivity, and it was very unnatural for them. So they did this documentary and tried to stop it. And so we have that same mentality. We think, oh, I'm going to be born here, and I'm going to be free to enjoy. We're thinking that I'm going to be the supreme enjoyer. I have the whole thing at my fingertips. I have whatever I want. I will be the supreme enjoyer. This is an idea that's come about a long time ago, since we were with Krishna and we misused our independence. And now we're thinking, I'm born to be free to really enjoy. Of course, that's proven wrong very quickly. Actually, we're in captivity. And we're captured by what? These senses and this mind and this body. We're all become slaves of our senses. The animals, they're also spirit soul, and they're captured, but usually they have one sense that's very strong. Like the dogs, you know, they've got the nose, and I think the deers, they have the ears to hear beautiful music, they're attracted to that. And then, another animal, hearing or seeing, the eagles and the birds, they can really see really well. But humans, we have all of our senses so strong, and they're pulling us away, and they're making us identify with this material body. And so we have an extra difficult time trying to get over this. We're expecting that with these senses that we will get some gratification, but we're never, ever satisfied. And especially, you know, if we're anxious to have something and lusting after it and everything, and then it doesn't come on our doorstep because we had, you know, the Amazon Prime said they were going to have it on my door the next day, and then it didn't come, it was an hour late. How disappointing, you know, and I'm not satisfied. Even if you get it on time, it's never going to make you completely satisfied. And so this media now, the media, the so-called advanced technology, is putting our senses in contact with millions and thousands of things every day, just going like that for a second, and completely agitating us. And now our senses are more difficult. Our intelligence is being swamped, and it's becoming more and more distracting. And then what happens is that these desires, they bring us back into another body, according to what we're thinking at the time of death. And then we start to look out of our eyes again, and we might look down and we think, oh my gosh, it's a furry body this time, or it's a scaly body, or a slimy, skinny body, or whatever it is. And I'm eating grubs, I'm eating worms, I'm eating, what's that, KFC? What is it? Colonel somebody or something, I don't, anyway. So this is things that we don't want to do. We don't want to eat these things, but we're forced to. We're being captivated by the material energy, and we're captured, coming back again and again. Forcing us to do things that we know we shouldn't do, right? So we need some support. Intellectually, we need to become stronger. Knowledge can burn up that nescience, that ignorance, as it's described in the Bhagavad Gita. And so our real support is through these scriptures and through the spiritual master's guidance. Every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is a knockout for our false ego. Wham, wham, wham. Every single chapter can knock out that false ego, such that we do want to surrender. We do want to take a step up and realize our higher consciousness. And in these scriptures, it's describing that there's four principles of freedom. So we want to be free, right? Born to be free. But it's strange because these are principles of restriction. You can get free from all this horrible addiction to intoxication by giving up this intoxication. It's such a horrible thing to think that you are totally controlled by these intoxications. And then illicit sex. Give up illicit sex. This is gets rid of the uncleanliness. It gets rid of that lust and hankering in your heart. You get control of your senses. No meat eating. It'll give you more compassion and equal vision of everyone if you see every living entity as a spirit soul. And then, of course, gambling. It gets rid of that propensity to lie and to cheat and to speculate. And it makes you more peaceful. So these are actually principles of freedom, if we really want freedom. And so this is how the bhakti process works, is that we engage our senses in the fire of devotion, of giving everything, like it's described in this purport, giving everything to Krishna. And then we are free to actually let that soul and our spiritual senses be engaged in a higher process, something that will link us and give us that wonderful pleasure that comes from Krishna. Just like this plug, when it's plugged into the outlet there, you get a complete connection, and you get it from the powerhouse. And so this is the bhakti yoga process, is that we can link ourselves up directly to Krishna. And so Krishna's very glad to accept our offerings too, that we give him. There's a nice song here that describes more or less what we'll be talking about. This is by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. O fish-like soul, why have you fallen into this entangling nets of Maya? You have not understood that by being bound up by those nets, you will have to remain in this material world for a long, long time. After becoming a captive in Maya's snare due to your desires for very insignificant enjoyments, you remain transformed in a spiritually diseased condition, punishable just like a disobedient servant. Now, by the power of devotional service, always remain subservient to Lord Krishna, swimming and frolicking freely in the nectaring ocean of Krishna Prema. So it's such a nice process. It makes so much sense if we just untangle ourselves from this false ego and this desire to be controller, and realize that by serving Krishna, we can be very happy. And especially this chanting process is such a simple process, anyone can do it. It is a type of meditation that does go past the mind, and it goes through the coverings of the material body, even the false ego. It can pierce through there, and it can go all the way to our hearts and revive that lost consciousness. And so the spiritual master also is such an important thing. The great souls, they write and they sing these songs of their realizations, of how their hearts and their bodies and their lives are transformed. It's very, very powerful to read these prayers. And so Srila Prabhupada, he set up these temples so that we can engage in this fire of devotion. But the spiritual master's words can be very sharp. But we need that sharpness to prick that bubble of illusion that we're in, to prick that big pride, that balloon of pride. So we should be very happy to come here and to listen and to engage in devotional service so that we can get rid of this misconception that we're just this body. And this way, it nourishes our soul. And of course, old age, that's something to look forward to, because that's taking away some of our abilities, some of our talents, some of our things that we're so attached to. So this is something that Krishna allows us to go through so that we become more dependent and submissive to him. And of course, it will make us much, much happier. And there's a song also by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that says that, oh, I've been enjoying this whole lifetime, but now, humbled by old age, now I'm begging you to please accept me. So this is one thing we can look forward to. The Bhagavad Gita also is describing how when Arjuna was thinking about his name tag. He didn't know whether he was going to be the fighter and fight, or if he should just give that up and go to the forest and be a renunciate. And then Krishna came by and he says, you know that actually if you don't do your duty and you go hide and you run away, then that's worse than death because of that reputation, that reputation that you have. And so this reputation comes from the ego also. But for some persons, like our spiritual master, we praise him and we understand that he is very reputed, that he does deserve praise and pride. So what is it? What do you do when you get praised? Or are you? What happens? How do you change that praise so that it doesn't get bigger and bigger and turn into pride? Even though you might be, worthy of that praise. So there's a story of a great saint. His name was Madhavendra Puri, and he had a deity form that he worshipped very intimately, so intimately. He was so transcendental that he could dream and that deity would speak to him. He had such a close relationship. And so his deity asked him to go somewhere and to do some service for him. And he did, although it was very inconvenient. He traveled very far. They didn't have any conveyances. They had to walk. And so he went, and on the way he stopped at another temple. And while he was at that temple, he was thinking, this temple is very famous for a preparation they make. And you cook down milk, and you cook it down, and it gets thicker and sweeter, and you put sugar in it, and it gets sweeter. And it's like, opening those Eagle brand condensed milk, that kind, And so that's what it was like. And they call it kheer. And so he said, and they offer it to the deity there at that temple. And so he was thinking, boy, if I could just taste that preparation, then I could make it for my deity. And he would be happy. And he thought, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about enjoying that food before it's offered to Krishna. Oh, this is horrible, He wasn't thinking for own sense gratification, but he was thinking, I did think of it before it was offered. So he lamented and he went away. And he went to the marketplace and he was just chanting, trying to get rid of that feeling of enjoying without Krishna, which he really wasn't guilty of, but he was so pure, he felt that this was an offense. And meanwhile, during the night, the person who took care of the deity was sleeping, and the deity woke him in a certain way and said, there's a person, Madhavendra Puri, he was visiting here, and he wanted to taste this preparation that you gave me today. He says, I stole it and I put it back behind me on the altar. Can you take that and go give it to him? And the pujari was like, he woke up and goes, oh my gosh, the deity spoke to me. I can't believe this happened. And he went inside and he looked, and underneath, and sure enough, underneath the clothes, there was that little pot of sweet rice. And so he thought, boy, this must be a really special person, that the deity has stolen the sweet rice and wants to give it to this person. So he ran to the marketplace. Madhavendra Puri, whoever is Madhavendra Puri, please, please, where are you? Where are you? The deity has stolen the sweet rice for you. And meanwhile, Madhavendra Puri heard of it. He goes, oh my gosh, now everyone's going to think of it. People did. They started. He actually left. He thought, I don't want people to praise me. So that's one way to do it. But he was worthy of that praise. And even though he was told of what he did, he started to cry out of ecstasy that the deity was so kind to him. And he couldn't control it. And people were going, look what a wonderful devotee he is, how advanced he is. But he didn't take that praise in a way. He wasn't looking for it. So I'm going to read you what Prabhupada says about this incident, about reputation and about praise. Almost all the conditioned souls within the material world are envious. Jealous people generally turn against one who automatically attains some reputation. This is natural for jealous people. Consequently, when a devotee is fit to receive worldly reputation, he is envied by many people. This is quite natural. When a person out of humility does not desire fame, people generally think him quite humble and consequently give him all kinds of fame. Actually, a Vaishnava does not hanker after fame or a great reputation. Madhavendra Puri, the king of Vaishnavas, bore his reputation, but he wanted to keep himself outside of the vision of the general populace. He wanted to cover his real identity as a great devotee of the Lord, but when people saw him overwhelmed in the ecstasy of love of Godhead, they naturally gave credit to him. And so you could, he was such a confidential devotee of the Lord, but he could wear that fame, just like Srila Prabhupada. We praised him, and he was due much more of admiration than we gave him, and he was, but he wore it very well. And what he did was he said, thank you, and he passed it on and gave credit to his spiritual master. I'm only doing this, I'm only famous because of my spiritual master. So this is one way to pop that bubble and to not let that praise become cancerous and grow and become a blockage to our devotional advancement. So this is important that we sometimes get some help to realize that maybe we are becoming a little proud, or our false ego still is quite big, even in devotional service. Today, I've been having some tractor problem out here. And so I went over there, and I got a new battery, and I get this, and we tried this, and still wouldn't start. And then I said, I think does this have a computer in it? And he goes, yes. Oh, God, oh, that means you got to go get a diagnostic test, right? You can't just fix it. You can't just look in the book. You got to go get something to find out where the problem is. And so I thought, oh, I got a, you know, big problem. But sometimes we need some diagnostic work done on our soul and on our advancement in spiritual life. And so then we can go to our God sisters, our guru, and or they might even come to us and say, you're getting a little out of line, you know, you may be getting a little puffed up there, or maybe you shouldn't be doing this, or getting guidance in that way. And so we should be ready with our ego, from our soul and from our heart, to actually accept our weaknesses and admit our defeats, try to correct our mistakes, and adjust our mentality so that it is in the proper mood of just wanting to serve Krishna and not wanting respect for ourselves. So bhakti, it's a 24-hour engagement. We're always having to try to fix our mind on Krishna and take it off of our own self. But we get a lot of benefits in devotional service. It's not just all work. I think everyone in this room who has chosen to go in the this lifetime and try to serve Krishna and to not go on this path as the of the karmic path of taking the results to ourselves. I think that they understand that they have now opened up a special account, a transcendental bank account. We've all been given a business credit card. You know, people are always trying to give you some kind of a business credit card. Anyway, so now we all have one. And everything we do goes on the Krishna business credit card. So everything we do, Krishna is accepting. And we don't have any balance. You know, it's clear. He accepts the results for everything. But we get interest. That's the most wonderful thing. Is that we don't have to pay for anything, but we just get the interest. And that's that Krishna's interested in us. And he's so interested in us that he'll help us even more to get back to the spiritual world. And the more we surrender, then he rewards us accordingly. The more he'll reveal himself to us. What a wonderful thing. All we have to do is desire. Take these horrible desires and turn them to Krishna. I just want to know you more. I want to serve you more. And then Krishna responds and he reveals himself in different ways to every single one of us. And then those people who are unfortunate, they have a karma credit card maxed out every lifetime. Right? Everything they do, you can look on their activities. Impious, pious. Totally. Never balances out, right? You always have it, either good or bad. It's always there. And that transaction goes to the next lifetime. And so you start right where you left off, and you've got all this karma to work off, and you're stuck here. Stuck here in this material world, and you don't know what kind of name tag you're going to have next lifetime. So, but by working for Krishna, we can overrule this, and that is our work in this lifetime. There's another nice quote. Let me see if I can find it. Yes, describing about abandoning all attachments to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruitive action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions, and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. So this is the path that we really should go on. And if we want to be proud, we can be proud. And this, we can be proud to be Krishna's dog. So this is a nice song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that describes his prayer, how his anxiousness to be Krishna's dog. Now taking all that I possess and surrendering it unto your lotus feet, O Lord, I throw myself down before your house. You are the master of the house. Kindly consider me your own dog. Chaining me nearby, you will maintain me, and I shall lie at your doorstep. I will not allow your enemies to enter, but will keep them outside the bounds of your surrounding moat. Whatever food remnants your devotees leave behind after honoring prasad will be my daily sustenance. I will feast on those remnants in great bliss. While sitting up or lying down, I will constantly meditate on your lotus feet. Whenever you call me, I will immediately run to you and dance in rapture. I will never think about arranging for my own nourishment and will remain absorbed in ever-cherishing love for my master. Bhaktivinoda now accepts you as his own maintainer. So we can be proud of our neck beats. This is our dog tag, that we're all Krishna's dog, and happy to sit at his doorstep and do whatever we can in this lifetime. And give our praise to Srila Prabhupada for allowing us to remain here and attempt to, this lifetime, do something different and get rid of this false ego. So anyone have any questions or comments over here?
Thank you for a very nice class. With regards to the spiritual credit card, I understand it's a very high interest credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna says that for those who serve me, I preserve what they have in my credit card, and I carry what they lack. So that's the interest-bearing portion. We get better results than we actually endeavor for by his mercy.
So everyone should get that credit card. Yes, Vedavagati. And we should give it to others. We should allow other people to have that advantage too. What if we mailed it all out to everybody? Told them that they could get rid of all their simple activities, and maybe more people would come. Yes?
Hare Krishna. Yes, actually that wasn't going to be my comment, but that is what made me come. The first devotee that I met, when he learned of my recent activities, this is so very sinful. But if you chant Hare Krishna, so that was the impetus. But my comment or question actually was, you know, you were talking about if somebody's karmically engaged, debits and credit, pious and impious, and it just goes on and on and on and on. So what about that verse in Bhagavad Gita where it says, even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. Could you explain how that works?
knowledge burns up. Burns up the ignorance. It's like a fire. And it erases that nescience. It's described that the knowledge is so powerful, we just absorb ourselves in these books. That's why we're so anxious to give out the books, that it starts to purify yourself. And then you can realize that I should change my activities. So the knowledge is our weapon, it's described, against nescience. And therefore we can know what we're supposed to be doing in service of Krishna instead of in service of ourselves. So the knowledge is very special. And we have so many books that there's no excuse that we can't give them to every home in Alachua at least.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned something about KFC, and can you tell me again what you said about it?
I said that when we wake up sometime in another lifetime, that we'll find ourselves in different bodies. We can even go down in the cycle, and we don't know where we're going to land. I mean, KFC is at Kentucky Fried, whatever.
Okay.
So we might be that we will be eating. We might not even be vegetarians the next lifetime. We can go way down. We can be a salamander and eating grubs, or we can be eating, or even lower ourselves to eat meat. So it's just like you never know where we're going to end up, because desires are so strong.
This isn't really a question, but I just wanted to tell you that I once attempted to distribute a book to Colonel Sanders. And he wasn't having it.
Did he touch it?
Pardon?
Did he touch the book?
I tried to make him touch it. He said, "Get out of my face with that." That was in San Diego about 1970.
Good try.
77 or something, 75.
How did you have contact with
him? I approached him at the San Diego airport.
Well, if he had T-lock on, he saw T-lock.
If I was wearing it, yeah.
Good try.
It was a good try. But I think the guy was just a determined demon. But at least, you know. Yeah, maybe. It made a good story 40 years later.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mother Akriti, for a wonderful class. I was thinking a good way to... Well, one of the good ways to keep the false ego in check is by trying to do outreach work. And I'm asking if you can help me, give me some guidance on... Because when we reach out to others to take to Krishna consciousness, not everyone is ready to take it up. So how to not be attached to the results, because naturally you want everyone, because we think this is the most wonderful thing, but not everyone thinks like that. So when you do outreach, how to not be attached to the results and how to...
Realize you're not the doer. You know, we just... It's going to be spread no matter what. You know, Lord Chaitanya's movement is predicted to go all over. But we get to do it, but we're not the doer. So you have to pray to just be the instrument, especially when it's really a hard day and no one's taking and everything. Please just send me one person, you know. But we don't know. You know, Lord Chaitanya is the one working through us. You know, you definitely learn some detachment during Sankirtan. And then, but it's also wonderful when you do get that pleasure and people do want to take. But there's no loss. There's no loss of diminution. There's always a positive thing comes from Sankirtan. There's so many stories of people that years later someone will tap you on the shoulder and say, you know, they have tilak on, they go, you know, you gave me a book a long time ago. And it may have been that person that didn't want it. I remember I went up to Lake City to the community college up there, and it was with Parijati, and we were trying to give out things, and everyone was Christian, everyone was giving us a hard time. Oh, it was just like, I'm never coming up here again, you know. It's just too. And then the next Sunday, one of the persons that we talked to came to the Sunday feast and got a Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, you just never know. So keep out there and keep trying, and pray to Lord Chaitanya, whatever you want, but just let me be that instrument. Like Prabhupada said, I'm a puppet in your hand, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. He didn't think he could do anything here, and he was going to be actually very depressed, thinking, oh, maybe I should get on that boat and go back to India. But then he said, Krishna, if you want, then you can make it happen. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.